Hello, I'm Bex, and it is the 1 year anniversary of the Week Junior show. Hooray! For this episode, I am joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14 year olds. Today, we've got writers Flora.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about pooping penguins, a brilliant mountaineer, and a mammoth discovery. Plus, as it's the summer of reading, we'll be having a debate all about reading a book more than once. So talking of reading, I've got a good question here. Which book character would you most like to be able to meet in real life? Flora, you can go first.
Well, I've chosen a character from a book that I've probably read about 10 times, bearing in mind it's about 700 pages long. It's called The East of Eden by John Steinbeck. And in it, there's a character called Lee, who is a Chinese-American servant to the Trask family. And he is deeply wise and very interesting.
Oh, okay, I've never read this book. So you're saying you want some wisdom here. That's what you want.
Yeah, and guidance.
I mean, I totally am on the same page as you. Michael, how about you?
Well, for similar reasons, I'd like to meet Sherlock Holmes because he knows everything, he sees everything. I feel like even just seeing him for a couple of minutes, you'd come away knowing a lot more than you did beforehand.
Good shout there, yeah. And Kieran, how about you?
My answer seems a bit flippant now. I think Matilda, partially because she could do magic, and I think that would be quite fun. But also, I think she'd be a great interview for the magazine. So, you know, always thinking of work, let's get Matilda in the Week Junior.
Professional Kieran there. He's got his working hat on. Excellent. I have gone for Dumbledore, similar to Flora, I guess, that wise kind of like you want to meet somebody who is clever and can give you some good advice. It seems a bit obvious saying somebody from Harry Potter, but I've done it, so there we go. Next up, it's time for our favourite fact. What have you learnt this week, Flora?
I learned a lot about mushrooms, but my favourite fact from the mushroom story is that fungi, i.e. mushrooms, are more closely related to animals than they are to plants.
What? That's blown my mind.
I don't really know much more than that, but I know that is true.
Flora, that is all I need. I'll be telling everybody I meet today that fact. Michael, how about you?
Well, later on, we're going to be talking about emperor penguins in Antarctica. And my favourite fact was learning that temperatures in the Antarctic can drop to minus 60, which, given the heat wave we've had in the UK this week, just reading about cold temperatures made me feel a little bit cooler.
Yeah, I can imagine. Grab your thermals and get to the Antarctic. And Kieran, how about you?
My favourite fact from this week is about a robot sloth called Slothbot, who has started working at a botanical gardens in the US. To begin with, this is a bit of a trial. It's solar powered and it crawls along really slowly along wires between trees, and it's hoped that if it does a good job there, it will get sent out into the wilderness to observe animals from high above. But if anyone hasn't got a copy of their magazine, I would recommend Googling it because it's a very cute looking robot.
All right, so before we kick off with real or rubbish, Kieran, you've got a request, am I right?
I do. So we are going to be having a chat with one of the Newsround presenters, De Graaf Mensah, in a little while. And we want to get your questions sent in to us so that we can ask him. So we're going to be talking a little bit about how different news organisations have covered the news during lockdown. And we'll also be finding out more about his career as a presenter and a bit about what's going on at Newsround. And we would love for your questions to be sent in. So all you have to do is email them in to us by the 19th of August via hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we will do our very best to ask as many of them to him when we have our chat.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much, Kieran. Now it's time for real or rubbish. This is when, one of you guys tells me a story and I have to guess whether it is real or whether it is rubbish. So Michael, tell me, what story is it today?
So this is an exciting story for anyone who likes chocolate, and in particular, chocolate chips. And that is because an engineer in the US is working with a chocolate company to make what they say are the world's best chocolate chips. And they've been designed especially using computers and advanced scientific techniques, which means they even melt at the right rate. They're shaped like a flattened pyramid with thick middles and thin edges, and they are supposedly scientifically, technologically, the best chocolate chips you can get anywhere in the world. Now, does this sound too good to be true, or are you already thinking about how many of these you want to order online?
I mean, obviously the latter. I love chocolate with all of my heart. I've no idea. This, I mean, On the one hand, I'm delighted about the idea that somebody has put some real time and effort into, of all the scientific problems in the world, this is the one that scientists have decided to solve. But then, for that very reason, it seems a bit ridiculous. It seems like we've got a lot of stuff going on right now. Have scientists really decided to just go down this chocolatey route? But maybe this was a problem that needed solving that we didn't realise. Perfectly meltable chocolate chips. I could do a whole monologue about this, but I probably best not. I'll have a little think about this story, and we'll find out together at the end of the show. If you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess and we can find out together. So now it's time for our three favourite stories from this week. Kieran, what have you got for me?
My favourite story from this week is about a 10,000-year-old mammoth that has been found in a Russian lake. Of course, the mammoth is no longer alive, but 9/10 of its body, including its skin, its body tissue, and even its poo, has been preserved throughout history because it was in such cold conditions in the lake. And it was quite exciting how it was discovered, because it was reindeer herders who were moving their animals through the countryside, and they spotted bits of mammoth in the shallow waters of the lake. And so they reported this to a local museum, and some experts came in and they managed to find even more of this animal. And so they think it would have been around 3 meters tall. It was probably an adult male, and it was probably between the ages of about 15 and 20 when it died, although there isn't any evidence or clues on the bones or anything like that that reveals exactly how it dies. But hopefully, with a bit more analysis, that sort of information will become clear. But what's exciting about this is that because it's so well preserved, it will allow researchers to find out more both about this individual mammoth, but also about what was going on around it at the time that it lived. So, for example, because they've got the poo, they can see what the animal ate. And if there is, for example, some pollen caught up in that poo, then they will be able to create a picture of what sort of flowers might have been growing in the region at that time. That might give you some information about how warm it was, what other animals might have been living there, and so on. So it's a really exciting sort of accidental discovery.
I love that finding out about somebody's poo can give us so much more information.
Poo is the secret to everything. We had a feature in Science and Nature a couple of issues ago all about poo, because it contains so much information about what an animal does, how its body works, what it's eating. It's absolutely fascinating. And I also want to say, on the subject of Science and Nature and sort of accidental discoveries, there's a couple of weeks left for our scavenger hunt competition that we've got going, which is basically you have to go out on a walk somewhere, and you've got a list of 5 things that you need to find and take a photo of, and then you send your photos in to us. And I don't know if I've spoken about it on the podcast before, but I wanted to remind everyone that they can take part if they like. And to do that, you just need to go to thewakejunior.co.uk/scavenger hunt. And lots of the photos that we've had in from people have been really exciting. So make the most of the good weather if you can, and get out and take a look to see what you can find.
All right, well, cheeky little plug for the Science and Nature magazine there, Kieran. Big fan of that. Flora, tell me, what have you been finding out about today?
I've been reading about a man called Neil Heritage, who had both his legs amputated above the knee after he was hit by a bomb while he was fighting in the Iraq War in 2004. And doctors told him he would never walk again. They fixed prosthetic legs onto his knees, above his knee, which are designed to mimic the function of real legs. But it still takes him, I think, 7 times the amount of energy to walk compared to someone with real legs. However, Neil Heritage has just climbed the top of the Matterhorn, which is one of the tallest mountains in Europe. The summit is almost 4,500 metres high, and he did it in 3 days with his friend Mark Hooks and several other former soldiers, as Neil Heritage is, who had been injured in war. And one of his legs actually detached about 100 metres below the summit, and it took them about 20 minutes to get it back on. And this was a really emotionally tense moment, because Neil Heritage and Mark Hooks had previously tried to climb the Matterhorn twice and failed due to poor weather. But they succeeded this time, and they've raised £6,000 for the charity that Heritage started, which is called Climb to Recovery. And it gives former soldiers the chance to recover from their injuries through climbing and mountaineering. And I just think he's such a cool guy. He's now planning to kayak the Amazon in 2021. And he's done loads of other marathons and triathlons, and doesn't let his legs hold him back.
That is incredible. I don't think I could do that at the best of times. It sounds like he's a pretty inspirational person.
Yes, I think very inspirational.
Michael, how about you? What have you been finding out about?
Well, if you thought we were done with poo on this podcast after Kieran's mammoth story, then I've got a treat for you, because this is another story that shows the power of poo. And that is because scientists using satellite photography have identified new emperor penguin colonies in Antarctica that they didn't know existed, because they saw patches of their poo scattered across the pure, clean, white ice. Now, emperor penguins, which are the largest species of penguin, breed on sea ice, which is floating, frozen seawater. They arrive at their breeding sites in April and lay their eggs from May to June, which is when it's winter in the Antarctic and when it's at its coldest and darkest. These eggs then hatch after 65 days, and the ice must stay frozen for about another 9 months before the chicks are then big enough to swim out to sea. And so there's loads of different emperor penguin breeding sites across Antarctica. And by looking at these high-resolution images taken by European Space Agency satellite, scientists from the British Antarctic Survey have been able to find brand new emperor penguin colonies they didn't know existed because of the poo that they left behind. There are some places where they thought that there might be penguins there, but until they saw this poo, they didn't know that they were there for sure, and now they do. And it's great news, because it means that there are more emperor penguins out there than we first thought. This discovery has actually increased the number of known breeding sites for emperor penguins up to 61, which means that the population could be anywhere between 5 to 10% bigger than we first thought. So once again, it just goes to show how important poo can be for scientific discoveries.
I mean, I love any story about penguins and any story about poo. So put together, this is a pretty peak week junior story. This is quite an interesting find. I love, again, that science can use poo to find out so many amazing things.
Exactly. And, you know, taken by a satellite, you know, in space, poo that can be seen from space, and finding out about all these penguins we didn't know are out there, as you say, it's a brilliant combination of two things, equally fascinating things, penguins and poo coming together for this brilliant story.
Let's just hope you can't also smell it from space, because I'm pretty sure that would be pretty bad. So now it's time for the big debate, and this week, as part of the Week Junior's Summer of Reading Challenge, we're asking whether you should ever read a book more than once. Who can tell me a bit more?
I can. So obviously this summer, a lot of people have been reading more books in lockdown, and a lot of people as well might have been taking part in our Summer of Reading Challenge, where you can read any three books, fill in a form reviewing them, and you could win a prize bundle of new books. If you go to thewikjunior.co.uk/summer of reading, you can find out more. And some of you may have decided to read brand new books that you haven't read before as part of this challenge, or some of you might have decided to reread old favourites. And interestingly, the charity the National Literacy Trust and the book publisher Puffin recently conducted a survey asking young people about their reading habits during lockdown. And what they found was that around 46% of those surveyed said they had read new books during lockdown that they hadn't read before, but 14% said that they decided to reread old books instead that they'd already owned, that they'd already read. And at the same time, some people have been using lockdown to sort of sort out their belongings and get rid of things they don't want anymore. And a lot of adults have said that old books that they've already read are one of the main items that they would be donating to charity shops once they reopen. So that got us thinking whether or not you should ever read a book more than once.
Okay, I'm very interested in this one. So Kieran and Flora are going to be arguing. Guys, do you both have some kind of clock or timer nearby to make sure you get to a minute?
Sure do.
Excellent work. And I guess, Kieran, you're going to go first. You are arguing for the motion that we should be able to read the same book more than once. Whenever you're ready, take it away.
I love reading books more than once. And that's because the first time you read something, particularly if it's a standalone book or it's the first in a series, you spend your time really getting to know the characters and the world. And you're so caught up in that, as well as wondering what might happen next, that you can easily miss sort of the craft behind the book and how it's been written and the little clues that are peppered throughout it to give you some hints as to what might happen next. But if you pick up that book again, it's like meeting an old friend again. This time you know what's going to happen, and you know which characters you like and which ones you don't like, so you can just focus in on the way that the story's being told. And as I said, authors like to drop in these little clues or sentences that will only mean something if you know what's going to happen next. So you need to read it twice in order to get the joy from that. And reading a book is something that's been proven to make you happier, and that makes sense. We rewatch films that we like all the time, we listen to our favourite songs on repeat, and there's absolutely no reason that it should be any different with books.
Oh, lovely stuff. Under a minute and well-reasoned. But Flora, can you do better? Whenever you're ready, take it away.
So imagine if you decided that you were only going to eat a small selection of food every day, or only ever walk down the same streets, or wear several versions of the same jumper or t-shirt or jeans. I think your life would be pretty boring. It's like painting on a very small canvas. And this is what it'd be like to reread the same selection of books over and over again. Meeting the same characters, hearing the same lines, imagining the same scenes. Books should really expand your mind, I think, and open you up to new ideas. Rereading the same book many times just makes your mind smaller or narrower and sort of zips you up. And surely you can find more imaginative uses for the books you already have rather than just rereading them. For example, you could swap a book with a friend, so you both have something new to read, and then you can share your thoughts with each other on what you thought about the book having read it for the first time. Because when you read a book for the first time, your perspective on it is likely to be the most fresh and original it will ever be.
Oh, I mean, slightly over a minute, but I will give you that, Flora. She goes for the variety is the spice of life approach. So tell me, Michael, what do you reckon? Who are you going to go with on this?
I think I'm leaning towards Kieran. I think Flora makes a good point that if you took that approach to everything, then life might not be that exciting. But I have reread books in the past, and I do think that there is something new that you can get out of it each time.
Yeah, I'm on a similar page to you. I would say Kieran, just because I know what it's like to comfort read a book. When you reread a book that you already know and love and you get to re-meet those characters, it's pretty good. But of course, we want to know what the listeners think. So let us know by going to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And if you send a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why, we might just play out the audio on next week's show. So last week, we debated on the podcast if museums and art galleries should always have a set route for visitors to follow. Now, this is interesting. In the poll, just 24% of you said yes to the idea and 76% voted against it. Here's what some of you had to say.
On Apple Podcasts, someone wrote, "I think that there should be set routes so that you can actually know what you're looking at or studying, and so that you can get a well-deserved muffin and hot chocolate in the cafe. Although it is summer, you may want an ice cream." Another listener agreed, adding, "I think they should do because then everyone gets to see everything and it's much harder to get lost. It means you won't miss anything too. However, if you want to go back to get something, you can't."
Lottie, aged 11, disagreed. She wrote, "I think that there shouldn't be set routes or guides because art is about being free. And if you have set routes, you won't be free. You'll be in a big group of people and might not even end up actually seeing the actual piece in the museum or art gallery."
Over on Pop Jam, someone argued no, because people want to be free and enjoy the art, and if there is a route, they might want to see a piece of art that isn't on the route, and then it gets confusing. And someone else said, "I think they should, as then people who work at the museums know where the customers are going and can keep an eye on them."
Lots of very interesting opinions there. So as you heard, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we might just play it out on next week's show. All right then, it's time for this real or rubbish story. Michael, remind me about this chocolatey adventure we've gone on.
So this was the story that an engineer in the US has partnered with a chocolate company to make the best chocolate chips in the world using engineering, technological, scientific techniques. They can even supposedly melt at just the right rate.
I mean, I'd love to know what the right rate or right temperature is. Although part of me thinks that I am amazed. So this is I'm stuck, basically. I'm really stuck because I want it to be true, but it feels like surely we've got other things to think about right now. But I guess the world of chocolate never stops. So I'm going to say it's real. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah, there we go.
Drum roll, please.
The world of chocolate never stops.
You heard me. Here we go. I'll do a little drum roll.
It's real.
Yes!
As you said, the world of chocolate never stops. And Dandelion Chocolate, who are the chocolate company, have employed Remy Lebesque, who also works for the electric car company Tesla, to put his engineering mind towards making the best possible chocolate chips that they can.
And if they want to send some my way, I will be absolutely delighted. I'm thrilled with that. That's good. A win for me, finally. This doesn't happen often. Well, thank you so much, guys. That is it for the Week Junior show this week. Goodbye to Flora.
Goodbye.
To Michael.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on PopJam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/The Week Junior and use the code PODCAST.